Hello, friends. My name is Nasra, and welcome back to Unfiltered Noggin. In today's episode, we're talking about America's first serial killer, H.H. Holmes, and his weird murder castle. You book a room at a hotel thinking it's going to be like any normal hotel visit. But after check-in, looking for your accommodation seems to be more difficult than it appears. You race down these hallways just to find that it leads to nowhere. You race up a flight of stairs only to discover that it leads to nowhere. And you're thinking, well, what's the idea behind this? Why are there so many dead ends that lead to nowhere? You start looking for your room on the second floor, and you come across several rooms and torture chambers. And as you continue to make your way to the third floor, you finally locate your room. The second you step into your room, the door slams shut, and gas starts to appear, causing you to fall to your own death. That is at least how the story of H.H. Holmes goes. Before we start, we just need to address that his birth name isn't H.H. Holmes, and that it's actually Herman Webster Mudgett. That's the name he was born with. That's his birth name. But for today's case, I'll just be using the name he prefers, Holmes. Holmes was born in Gilmanton, New Hampshire on May 16, 1861. He was the third born middle child to Levi Mudgett and Theodith Page Price. His parents were strict Christians. Holmes' father, Levi, was regarded as being quite abusive to his family, as well as being born from a farming family. Levi had lots of occupations in his life. He went from being a farmer to a house painter to a trader and so on. He never stuck to one job. In school, Holmes was considered a model student. Like, he was a great student. He was an A-plus student, which resulted in him being bullied by his classmates. During his childhood, he was obsessed with death. He loved human skeletons, and he loved to dissect animals. The whole experience was just fascinating to him. After graduating at 16 years old, he married a woman named Clara Levering, and together they had a son named Robert Levering Mudgett. Dr. Holmes registered, enrolled in the Department of Medicine and Surgery at the University of Michigan in 1882 and graduated 2 years later. While a student there, Holmes took a number of cadavers from the laboratory. He mutilated the corpses and claimed that the victims died in accidents in order to claim life insurance money. Holmes ended up abandoning Clara and Robert, causing them to return back to New Hampshire because Holmes was just taking on too many jobs and he was traveling throughout the country and he didn't have time for his wife and his kid. Holmes relocated to Moores Forks, New York, and while he was there, a story spread that he was spotted with a little child who later went missing. According to Holmes, the child returned to his home in Massachusetts, and Holmes just left town. The cops believed his story, and no investigation was ever conducted. He later got a job as a keeper at Norristown State Hospital in Philadelphia, but the position just wasn't working out for him, so he quit and he started working at a local drugstore in Philly, pharmacy. During his time at this pharmacy, a boy died after ingesting medication that was brought from this pharmacy. And just like last time, Holmes denied any role in the boy's death before departing to Chicago. He arrived in Chicago in August 1886, the city where his murder castle was going to be built, the city where most of his crimes were going to take place. Holmes came across Elizabeth S. Holton's drugstore in Inglewood, and he ended up getting hired by Elizabeth Holton. And once he proved that he was a good associate, a good coworker, Elizabeth ended up letting him buy the pharmacy because he wanted to buy the pharmacy. He just had to prove himself before buying the pharmacy, if you know what I mean. And shortly after that, Elizabeth Holton was nowhere to be found. She just vanished. Holmes ended up buying an empty property across the street from the drugstore to build his murder castle. The building process began in 1887 and it was nearly finished by 1892 with three floors and a basement that would house the new pharmacy. The storefront was on the first floor and his elaborate torture chambers and cells, which included a funnel going to the cellar, were located on the second floor. And the third floor consisted of several apartment rooms that you can live in. There were trap doors throughout this building. There were vault. He had a vault and he had confusing hallways that led to nowhere, staircases that led to nowhere. Like, you would open a door and it would be a brick wall. Like, that's how confusing this building was. There were so many rooms. There was a room filled with acid and much more. And then he had chutes in the rooms that led to the basement. You're probably asking, why were there chutes in the first place that led to the basement? Because the basement was his own laboratory. In the basement, he had dissecting tables, a stretcher rack, and a crematory. Basically, after he killed individuals, his victims, he would send the bodies down the chute so that he could dissect them and then clean the bodies in a crematorium to dispose the remains of his victims. He would also sometimes just place parts of the bodies in large acid vats or use a stretch rack to see how far a person's body can be stretched and then kill them that way. Such a brutal way to die. He would then sell the organs and bones to medical facilities, institutions, and even the black market. To make this hotel look normal, he needed hospitality workers. As a result, Holmes presented himself as this rich guy looking for a wife, and he also presented himself as this rich guy looking for young woman to cover these positions as a housekeeper, as a receptionist, and whatever type of hospitality jobs there are. And in order to work or visit or marry Holmes, you had to have life insurance. Holmes even offered to pay the insurance premiums as long as he was named the beneficiary, the person who receives the insurance money when you die. People in the neighborhood began to suspect Holmes because they would see lots of ladies, his guests, his spouses, fiancés, mistresses, and staff enter the hotel / murder castle, but they would never see them leave. Kind of like the Leonarda Cianciulli case where her customers were seen walking in, but they never came out because she killed them. And because it seemed suspicious to everyone, several individuals reported it to the police. With all of this going on, Holmes met a man that he can trust named Benjamin Pitzel. And Benjamin's profession was a carpenter. He basically helped with most of the construction and repairing. He was described to be Holmes' little tool, like his little partner in crime type of thing. In 1893, the World's Columbian Fair was taking place in Chicago, and Dr. Holmes was beyond excited because he knew people needed somewhere to stay for the event. And so he used his methods and he lured in visitors by using his charm to seduce women, and it worked, and many people who stayed at that castle died. Despite this, Holmes had several spouses and fiancés and mistresses residing at that castle, the murder castle. Julia Smith was one of his mistresses and one of his earlier victims. At the time of her murder, Julia was married to a guy named Ned Connor, and Connor went away, leaving his wife behind because he learned about Julia's involvement with Dr. H.H. Holmes. In 1891, Julia informed Holmes that she was pregnant with his baby girl, who they later named Pearl, and insisted that they should marry. Holmes consented to the marriage aspect on one condition, that Peril cannot be a part of the relationship and that Julia had to allow him to, like, she had to give him permission to conduct a abortion on Pearl, and she agreed. The whole marrying thing, marrying Julia, was just an act for Holmes. He wasn't really going to marry her. Instead, before slaughtering Pearl, his baby girl, he overdosed Julia with chloroform. When questioned about Pearl and Julia's locations, Holmes, of course, this pathological liar man, simply stated that they traveled to Iowa to attend a family wedding. In 1893, Boston, Massachusetts, Holmes met an actress named Minnie Williams, and the two got along all right. And during their little friendship, they decided to take their relationship a step further and became a couple. After a few months, it's time for Holmes to return back to Chicago, where his murder castle is. Before he left, he offered Minnie a position as his personal stenographer, which is a translator at the murder castle. And she eagerly accepted. As you're aware, he has his own methods of convincing people to do things for him. Holmes managed to persuade Minnie Williams to give him a deed to her property in Fort Worth, Texas, to a guy named Alexander Bond, one of Holmes' aliases, in which she did transfer him the deed back in April of 1893. Minnie later asked Annie, her sister, to visit her in Chicago. Holmes and Annie became fast friends shortly after her arrival. One day, Holmes persuaded Annie to get him a file from his vault for him, right? Because he was too busy and he needed somebody. He needed a helping hand. So he asked Annie, can you go to my vault? Can you get a file for me? And she said, sure. As she was searching for this file, he locked her in the vault and began to gas her. And he poisoned Minnie shortly after her sister's death. In July 1894, Holmes was arrested for the first time in St. Louis, Missouri, for selling mortgage goods. While he was incarcerated, he met a man named Marion Hedgepeth, an inmate that was sentenced to 25 years for, like, I don't remember the crime, but it had something to do with him being a trainee or something like that. And Holmes created a scheme to defraud a insurance company out of 10 grand by purchasing a life insurance policy on himself. And the way he was planning to get that 10 grand was by faking his death. In exchange for the name of a lawyer, he promised Hedgepeth $500 off of the 10 grand. Holmes was sent to Jephthah Howie, a St. Louis attorney. Jephthah thought Holmes' plan was wonderful, but Holmes' plot to fake his own death fell through when the insurance company got suspicious and they refused to pay. But Holmes was not giving up anytime soon. Instead of Holmes like faking his own death, he pulled a similar scheme with his partner in crime, Benjamin Pitzel. He told Pitzel that he and his wife would get a portion of the 10 grand if he agreed to the plan. Mind you, this plan, in which I'm about to explain, is taking place in Philadelphia. According to this three-step plan, Pitzel was going to be set up with an inventor under the alias B.F. Perry. Holmes was then going to kill Pitzel and then disfigure him in a lab explosion. And Holmes' position in this whole plan was to find the right cadaver to cover up Pitzel's fake death. And Benjamin Pitzel agreed to this plan. But little did he know that H.H. Holmes had other plans. You see, Holmes didn't follow through with this three-step plan. Matter of fact, he blindsided his friend and actually murdered him with chloroform and then set his body on fire with benzene. Eventually, Holmes received life insurance, and no, he did not share it with Jephthah Howie, Hedgepeth, or the Pitzel's family, as he promised. Holmes managed to convince Pitzel's wife to give him her three kids named Alice, Nellie, and Howard. And at this time, Holmes was traveling back and forth from the States and Canada. Eventually, he ended up killing Nellie and Alice by gassing them in a trunk and then killing Howard with pills from a local pharmacy. With all of this going on, there were a couple loose screws rolling around. Back in 1894, Holmes received insurance money, life insurance money, for killing Benjamin Pitzel, but he forgot to pay Hedgeworth his $500 in return for Jephthah Howie. And when Hedgepeth knew he wasn't getting that $500, the police received a huge tip from no other than Hedgepeth himself. Hedgepeth told the police everything. He told the police all about Holmes' plan to receive 10 grand from an insurance company and how Holmes didn't hold up his end in the deal, the promise. On November 17, 1894, Holmes' murder mission ended when he was arrested in Boston for horse theft in Texas. The police began interviewing some of his employees at the murder castle until one employee came forward. He was a caregiver, and he said that we were not allowed to clean nor step on the second floor or the third floor. And of course, when you tell someone, don't go here or there in general, there will always be someone who will go no matter what you say.
In this case, that was the authority. So the police headed up to the second floor to discover what Holmes was hiding. And when they saw torture cells, torture chambers, and several apartment rooms, they were shocked. They continued to investigate the building and came across the vault. In the vault, they saw scratch marks from when Annie was being gassed. And after they left the vault, they made their way to Holmes' personal laboratory, the basement. In the basement, they found several human bones and organs, a dissecting table, a stretch rack, and more. And this was a dead giveaway that this man was murdering people, especially since all of his victims vanished when they visited his castle. In October 1895, Holmes was tried for Pitzel's murder. He was found guilty and sentenced to death. He originally claimed innocence, claiming that he was possessed by the devil, demon, and was compelled to conduct such crimes. But nobody really believed him. Holmes ended up admitting to killing 27 people. However, no one really knows how many individuals he murdered. It was said that he killed between 27 and 200 victims. On May 7, 1896, 34-year-old Holmes was hanged. During his hanging, his neck did not snap, which was unusual. However, he was strangled for over 15 minutes until he was pronounced dead. What I found interesting about this case was that before Holmes' death, he asked for his coffin to be filled with cement and buried 10 feet to avoid grave robbing, because he thought some sicko like him would come and use his body as a cadaver for medical institutions. It was just odd and interesting to me that he thought that would happen. And yeah, this is it for today's episode. Thank you for tuning in and listening. If you enjoyed, subscribe for more uploads, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye.